Welcome to the Taxcast from the Tax Justice Network. Around 20 minutes each month of news, scandal and analysis you won't find anywhere else. With me, Naomi Fowler. The Taxcast is available to everyone on www.tackletaxhavens.com. It's also on the Tax Justice Network's website, www.taxjustice.net/taxcast. You can subscribe to our RSS feed, to the Tax Justice Network's YouTube channel, email me on naomi@taxjustice.net, look for us on iTunes, or find us on a radio station near you. Coming up later on the Taxcast, the psychopathic mafia boss corrupting democracy at the heart of Europe in Italy's capital city of Rome. But first, the Tax Justice News Roundup for this month. In the United States, Congress quietly passed a massive corporate tax giveaway just after the midterm elections. These so-called tax extenders add over $400 billion to the nation's 10-year budget deficit. At the same time, politicians put a stop to low-income credit and child tax credit support. John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network.
This is what we mean when we talk about the corporate welfare state. We're no longer seeing a democracy which is aiming to protect the interests of poor people or even middle-income people. This is now a democracy which is largely focused on protecting the interests of big capital, big businesses. Shame on the extenders, shame on the Senate, shame on the Congress, but shame on other countries going down exactly the same rate.
Also in the United States, another example of democracy for sale to the highest bidder. Congress has just raised the contribution levels wealthy donors are allowed to make to political parties. Apparently, that measure was on page 1,599 of a 1,603-page long end-of-year spending bill. In the UK, the Chancellor has just announced his intention to levy a new 25% tax on diverted corporate profits. That's being dubbed the Google tax. We'll have more on that later. $991 billion left the developing world in 2012 because of crime, corruption and tax evasion. That's according to the organisation Global Financial Integrity's latest estimates. They reckon illicit financial flows from poorer countries are growing at more than 9% a year. The European Union's anti-money laundering directive is in its final stages of negotiations as I'm speaking to you now. It includes the proposal for a public register of the real owners of companies and trusts. Unfortunately, we suspect at the Tax Justice Network that the public part of the register will get watered down by some states who are rather too keen on secrecy. We'll be discussing the role in all that of the former Prime Minister of Luxembourg, now the eminently unsuitable EU Commission President, later. We've had more revelations about cosy corporate tax deals in Luxembourg via the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. Some corporations have been paying less than 1% tax on their profits, and that information's in the public domain now thanks to a French whistleblower who's just been arrested and charged. We'll talk about that later too. And this month, another whistleblower, former banker Rudy Elmer, collapsed in court during his trial in Switzerland. He and his family have been subjected to years of intimidation and harassment because of his decision to expose dodgy practices in the Cayman Islands. The Tax Justice Network has challenged human rights organisations about why they haven't supported more strongly whistleblowers taking on the might of the tax haven industry. Those are the Tax Justice headlines for this month. Now we're going to talk to John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network for his take on this month. Okay, John, so we've seen LuxLeaks, so-called, which is the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists' expose of cosy tax deals enjoyed by some of the world's biggest multinational corporations. Well, now there's been an arrest of the alleged source of these leaks, a 28-year-old Frenchman called Antoine Deltour, and he's made some very interesting public statements. I'm just one element in a larger movement. And it turns out he's the former employee of PricewaterhouseCoopers. Allegedly, he's leaked 28,000 pages of documents about tax breaks enjoyed by 340 large companies. And he says that he copied this data without any kind of plan initially, just because he was appalled by their content.
Well, that's right. Antoine Deltour was arrested on Friday and charged with theft, money laundering and exposing trade secrets. So certainly lots of secrets have come out. And there's a pattern here. Whenever a whistleblower comes forward with information revealing this antisocial and harmful activity, whether it's a bank or PricewaterhouseCoopers in this case, their initial reaction is to say, this data has been stolen from us. From our point of view, what is concerning is that time and again, whistleblowers are being treated extremely fiercely. At the moment, Rudy Elmer, the Swiss whistleblower, is facing court trial in Switzerland and extensive harassment. And the focus has been switched around away from the data that's been revealed and what it reveals about the wider systemic issues to the person who actually does the whistleblowing. So I think we should be quite concerned about the treatment of Antoine Deltour going forward. But the key thing is he says that he's only one part of it, because some of the information that's been released more recently relates to a period beyond his time of employment with PricewaterhouseCoopers. So he's saying, I cannot possibly have been the source of all of the information that has been revealed. As you say, there are some 28,000 pages of documents. I myself saw some of those documents back in November 2011, and they are a truly extraordinary trove of information revealing how deals are being struck very secretively between PricewaterhouseCoopers acting on behalf of their clients and the Luxembourg authorities. It has clearly been an astonishing blow to the tax avoidance industry to have this level of disclosure.
Right, and somebody leaking information like this is really performing a public service, because, I mean, the fact that Disney, for example, paid just over 0.25% in tax because of a nice deal that it had going in Luxembourg, that is something that is very much in the public interest.
It is very much in the public interest, and I think it has to be accepted that there are a large number of tax avoidance deniers, in the same way that you have climate change deniers who for a very long time have said that there is no issue, climate change is an entirely fabricated nonsense. And I think what we've seen here through the LuxLeaks revelations is, first of all, it's not just a small number of companies. We've all known that. It involves most of the world's biggest companies, and it's quite clear that in most cases these deals are, if not outright illegal, they are certainly not legitimate. And if the information had been made public a long time ago, there would have been much more challenge, both by governments and by civil society, against these deals. So I think it's entirely in the public interest that whistleblowers are not only able to come forward, but are protected from the kind of corporate backlash and state backlash that we might be seeing here.
Right, and that moves us on to talk about Juncker, the former Prime Minister of Luxembourg, while many of these deals were being struck, and now, of course, EU Commission President. It may be that he's backing away from making the registers of real owners of companies public. It is worrying that this is happening just days before the new EU anti-money laundering directive, which includes this beneficial ownership measure. It's just days away from being finalised, or so we thought.
Yes. Jean-Claude Juncker, President of the European Commission, was approached by 45 investigative journalists who wrote a letter urging him to put pressure for a key anti-corruption measure which would have required a public register of beneficial ownership of all companies and trust owners across all 28 member states of the European Union. And in his reply to this letter, which came from the Bureau of Investigative Journals, Juncker has said, and I'm going to quote it word for word here to show how obfuscatory his message is. He said, in the ongoing talks on the Commission's proposals, our negotiators support provisions of enhanced transparency and call for systems of access to beneficial ownership information, including clarification on the possibility of access by third parties who demonstrate justified legitimate interest. It's the last part of the sentence that causes concern. The possibility of access by third parties who demonstrate a justified legitimate interest. When he talks about third parties, he's talking about investigating journalists, NGOs and others who are looking, who have reason to want to know who's behind these secretive offshore companies. But then this part, who demonstrate a justified legitimate interest, is worrisome, if not scary, because, first of all, who do they have to justify this interest to, and who will determine what is a legitimate or not legitimate interest? Will it be a state organisation? Will it be a member of the European Commission? Will there be an ombudsman? How long will this process take? How will they determine what's in the public interest? These things are best not left to state agencies. It is far better that there is complete transparency, unless there is an overriding public interest for not having disclosure of that information. And there need to be safeguards to make sure that the legal community and the tax dodging industry more generally doesn't find loopholes which enable it to hide information behind these very secretive companies. So I think that Jonkner appears at face value to be siding with those who don't really want to push forward proper transparency.
Quelle surprise, one might say, given his his former position in Luxembourg as Prime Minister.
We, that is the Tax Justice Network, said his appointment should not have gone ahead. We were saying that at the early part of this year when he was first mooted as a potential president. We think that his appointment is catastrophic for Europe as a whole because he is so clearly wedded to supporting tax havens.
Moving on now to the UK and the UK Chancellor's surprise announcement proposing a so-called Google tax, which would be a tax on diverted corporate profits. Now, sounds good. What on earth does he mean?
Yes, the Google tax, otherwise known as the profits diversion tax, was a surprise announcement in the Chancellor's autumn statement. And George Osborne made it quite clear that his objective here was to counteract the arrangements used by multinational companies that result in evasion or erosion of the UK tax base. So what he's talking about in practice is a 25% tax rate applicable to all companies which are either deemed to be exploiting the permanent establishment rule, and that applies to companies like Google, which obviously trade in the United Kingdom and say they have no permanent establishment in the United Kingdom, or companies where they have transactions in the country, but those transactions lack economic substance. So, for example, we're talking here about where profits are being diverted to subsidiaries in tax havens. We don't know the full detail. What is clear is the Chancellor is expecting that the exemptions will be applicable to small and medium enterprises where the total sales revenue do not exceed 10 million. So he's clearly targeting the larger companies. I think we have to look at a little bit of the context here. The context in the United Kingdom is that the corporate tax revenues, they've fallen from 10% of total revenues in 1980 to 6% today. And that despite huge increases in corporate profitability and huge increases in corporate activity as many services have been privatised. And that's the position the Chancellor now finds himself in, because to make matters worse, the UK economy, like many other economies, has seen huge downward pressure on wage rates. Many people are now earning well below the tax threshold, and that number is increasing very, very fast indeed. So tax yields from income tax on working people are falling dramatically as well. So the Chancellor finds himself under huge pressure now to increase yields by introducing a tax largely targeted at the large American companies that have been using very elaborate tax avoidance techniques to shift their profits offshore. Interestingly, Australia is now considering adopting a similar profits diversion tax. It'll be interesting to see how far that goes, because this must be quite worrying to the officials at the OECD as they're negotiating their base erosion profit shifting provisions, which include provisions around permanent establishment. It's not by any means clear whether this will fit in with what's being proposed under the BEPS process.
Yeah, I think it's worth remembering that we're only a few months away from the general elections. And as we know, tackling tax avoidance is a vote winner.
Tackling tax avoidance has become a very important issue in the upcoming elections in the United Kingdom, with over 80% of the population saying that they regard tackling tax avoidance as a higher priority than actually imposing further austerity in the coming years. So this has become a very, very big issue in the United Kingdom and elsewhere. This measure, it's quite possible it will yield a great deal of money, because I think that the tax professionals, who generally speaking don't like to be targeted and don't like to be caught out, will be put in a position where they will err on the cautious side, and they will start to advise their clients to start changing their tax structures. So potentially this could yield a great deal more money than might initially be expected.
John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network. Now it's time for the TaxCast special feature. This month, the TaxCast goes to the Italian capital city of Rome, where its citizens are in shock because their belief that mafias are a southern Italian problem has been well and truly blown apart.
Brucia la luna in cielo e io brucio d'amori.
When we hear about the Mafia, we tend to think about Sicily, the Cosa Nostra, Corleone and the Godfather films. But for once, the spotlight isn't on Sicily, it's on Rome, where events this month have shown the capital has its own Mafia. After years of investigation into what's known as Mafia Capitale, the Italian police have arrested 37 people in Rome, many of them high-profile public figures. The former mayor of Rome is one of 100 others under investigation. Politicians from the two main political parties have been arrested, along with the head of the National Civil Protection Department, a police chief and, incredibly, the president of the Anti-Corruption Council. And this is the Mafia Capitale boss being blocked on the road and arrested by police with machine guns. Journalist Cecilia Ferrara of the investigative reporting project Italy has been following the case.
It's really shocking. Having half of the municipality on the payroll of a criminal group whose head is a former member of Banda della Magliana, the right-wing extremists coming directly from the 70s. The main two political parties are involved in the story, taking money from a criminal group. So I want to win a tender. You put me in touch with the person who is in charge, and we are talking about the social services in Rome, the immigration services, cleaning the gardens, cleaning the streets. They had a politician on the payroll, paying like, I don't know, depending on the importance of the politics, 5,000 per month to 15,000 per month. Till now, we still don't know the exact amount of money. We can assume from the wiretap conversations that came out, where this Massimo Carminati, the head of the group, would tell that he's putting 1 million euros per month away, so to say. But the investigators suspect a much bigger sum that are in offshore, in some safe place. At the moment, this is what the investigators are looking for.
And the Italian investigators will need all the luck they can get. Mafia Capitale channeled money through the secrecy jurisdictions of Luxembourg, Switzerland, Liechtenstein and the Cayman Islands. Here's Vittorio Agnoletto of Libera International, an organisation that's been fighting the mafia and organised crime since 1995.
After a lot of years, we have understood that it's very important for us to study the financial and economic connection. So we discovered that it's not sufficient to study the illegal financial system. There is a gray zone inside the financial world between legal and illegal. It is in this gray zone where organized crime put his money. So we are working about offshore, tax haven, and so on.
Organized crime is a historic problem in Italy, but Cecilia Ferrara says the Mafia Capitale case shows how Italy's democracy is being undermined.
So we know that the southern part of Italy, organized crime, the anti-state is stronger than the state. But now we have organized crime at the capital of Italy, Rome, where the real power is. The people of the municipalities in Rome are main people of the Italian national politic. Alemanno, the former mayor who's under investigation, is one of the main persons in the Berlusconi party. So this is really dangerous.
Criminologist Professor Vincenzo Ruggero of the UK's Middlesex University.
If the mafia has gone on and on and on for decades, a century, it's because obviously the allies that they have within the political world and the economic world are such that they can reproduce themselves. I mean, my question is, who corrupts whom? See, so is it true that the mafia, by entering the economy, corrupts the economy? Or is it true that the mafia enters an economy which is already corrupt? In fact, there's a mutual learning process. So the entrepreneur and the businessman and the politician will learn a mafia method. And the mafioso will learn the white-collar crime. So the mafioso will be a white-collar criminal, like their new colleagues and peers. That's why in Palermo, when I go there and talk to judges, students, etc., and colleagues, we don't talk about the mafia anymore. We call it the mafia method. It's now a method.
There have been some advances recently in Europe on tackling organised crime. A new EU directive is supposed to now make it easier to seize assets across borders and turn them over for public benefit. And a new European prosecutor role has been created, which should encourage collaboration among different national legal systems. But it's the global financial structures and the way they work that remains the key problem. Professor Ruggero.
Hot money, according to the estimates that we do in criminology and Interpol does at European level, when you think about hot money, you think it's money from drugs. Do you? Everybody thinks you know, dirty money or money laundering. It's not. It's only 10% is our estimate is money from illegal activities. The rest is money from legal activities, which is hidden. So at this stage, the two things, like tax evasion and laundering, are very similar, although they are opposite. When you launder the money, you have to pretend that the money you have earned has been earned legally. So you turn the illegal money into legal. Well, tax evasion is exactly the opposite. You turn your legally acquired money into illegal money. And we call all of this together hot money.
Che tutti martedì, I mercoledì,
this is Silvio Berlusconi, Italy's former prime minister, king of a huge media empire and convicted tax evader. He knows all about hot money. Let's not forget, though, that the former British prime minister, Tony Blair, paid just a fraction in tax on his millions. All perfectly legal, of course, but if he'd been successfully challenged in court, you wonder if things might have been different. The current British Prime Minister's father was an enthusiastic user of tax havens in his business affairs. Says Professor Ruggero, they're all good examples of why governments aren't tackling this problem very fast.
Berlusconi started his political career by waving in the streets of and in the squares of Italy the biography of Margaret Thatcher. He said, I'm going to make this country like Thatcher has made her own country, the UK. Immediately, his money went into the Channel Islands. Let's not forget that the lawyer Mills, who was also the husband of an MP in Britain, was the guy who helped him hide the money. The money is hidden there. So my response is normally, well, Berlusconi belongs to you more than to me. You allowed him to be the big tax evader in Italy. And as you know, he's been also sentenced for this. And British lawyers and the British financial world helped him very well in committing these crimes. Yeah?
He may not be in government anymore in Italy, but of course he has continuing influence over current events. Cecilia Ferrara.
Silvio Berlusconi will say, OK, we have to get down the government of the city and to go to new election. He, who has been accused by many processes to be the politician chosen by the mafia in the 90s. And Silvio Berlusconi himself had among his employees Antonio Mangano, a man of Cosa Nostra, condemned for mafia. So it's really a strange a strange country ours, where Silvio Berlusconi is accusing the municipality of Rome of mafia while he is being under suspect of being the man of the mafia in the 90s.
Professor Ruggero.
There's another thing. I mean, when we talk about the financial world, I think, in my view, what's happening at the legislative level is that you may introduce every now and then some pieces of legislation which try to stop the most obvious organized criminals. But you can't go too far, because if you go too far, you get rid of organized crime, but then you get rid of political corruption as well, and you don't want to do that. So the measures are always a bit shady, a bit complicated, so that you may identify every now and again a mafioso. But be careful, that mafioso may be a politician or an entrepreneur, a businessman. So you don't want the legislation to be too tough. Otherwise, you open a can of worms. When a few years ago there was this public alarm, if you like, that the mafia was entering the city of London. And so a conference was organized, and I was invited to speak at this conference. And my paper was very provocative, if you like, say, well, if there is a case that the mafia is entering the city of London, I think the problem is the city of London, it's not the mafia. The mafia goes wherever there is a possibility. Well, how did we allow this? You know, the scandalous thing that we still have in Britain, in my view, is there are still places where you can open up a trust in Guernsey, in some Channel Islands, for £1. You know, there are people there whose job in those islands is to act as a face. What do you call it? A
front.
As a front, exactly.
You're talking about things like nominee directors.
And prestanomi, we call them.
Which is a typical name thing. Lenders.
Yeah, exactly. Name lenders, which is a typical mafioso thing. Secondly, I mean, the importance of finance in Britain is such that all of the main political parties in Britain survive thanks to the official or hidden help they get from the financial world. So the financial world dictates what governments have to do. In some countries, you don't need anymore. Somebody even said this publicly without being ashamed. We don't need parliaments anymore. We don't need politics anymore. We need people who can do business. We need managers. And, you know, and that's it. Some prime ministers in Italy, for example, were put there without being elected, but being elected by an economic financial body which created the economic crisis in Italy, which created the political crisis and replaced one prime minister with another. I'm talking about Monti, I'm talking about even now Renzi. He's not been elected.
No, he was not elected.
Now, if this is the world in which the official agents operate, well, of course the mafia reproduces itself. It will go on forever.
The Mafia Capitale case is far from over. Let's hope it'll be a wake-up call, not just for Italians, but for all Europeans, because Italy can't tackle this alone. If the European Union doesn't pass strong enough transparency laws on public registers of the real owners of companies, it'll be failing its citizens. The Mafia Capitale case shows how banking secrecy is the enemy of democracy, and it reveals an unpleasant reality at the heart of Europe, that someone like Massimo Carminati, the Mafia Capitale boss, who's alleged to have been involved in political assassinations and even massacres, is wielding such power. Cecilia Ferrara.
I hope, actually, that this investigation and this shock can be the moment when Italian authorities and Italian people are saying, okay, stop, we have to change, because they're stealing our money, they're stealing our democracy, our freedom. You know, also the freedom of the market is not real in Italy if there is this such high corruption, if the market is influenced by criminal groups, if in Rome you cannot do anything without asking Carminati. We cannot accept corruption, we have to change.
You've been listening to The Taxcast from the Tax Justice Network. For more information on the investigative reporting project Italy, go to www.irpi.eu. We'll be back next month.